Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
Kia ora, Kirsten, how are you?
Good. I'm just wondering why we're not playing If I Had a Hammer.
Yeah, we've just got a little bit of percussion today, just adding to all of the tracks.
Yeah, so if you're wondering, wow, I haven't recently heard that sort of hi-hat going on.
That right version, there. Yeah. Hey, so, what are we talking about this morning?
Such a great topic, genre, thing.
This is quite up your wheelhouse, is it?
Oh, I'm just loving it. Not as much as you love yacht rock, of course, but... So it's called The Great American Songbook, and which is interesting because it's not a book. It is not an actual book. It's a canon, for those of you word nerds, a body of music. It can be called, you know, American popular song or jazz standards.
Yep.
And it's this collection of music, you know, written between, say, like 1910, 1960. I mean, but anything can be added to it. There's not like huge debates about it.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of lists. There's a lot of the same stuff on it. And they're particular songs. The weird thing is a lot of these songs were written originally like for a Broadway play or for a movie.
That's interesting.
And it's just ones that became successful. And I was reading some interesting things about it. Someone was saying, you know, topical songs were topical, but these weren't. These had like this universal element that took them out of where in the play or in the movie they were.
That's really interesting. I haven't really ever thought about all of these under one umbrella before, because I guess it's not necessarily music that we grew up with in New Zealand in the same way. I think everybody will know these songs undoubtedly, but...
You will, especially if you've ever seen a rom-com.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, if you've ever played professional jazz or played in a restaurant. I played piano in a restaurant for years. And if you're playing with a jazz band, you know, the conductor will say, all right, we're doing All of Me in G. And you just go, like, you're supposed to know these songs. And any sort of proper, like, jazz singer or maybe trumpeter, any of the sort of solo artists.
You have these in your repertoire.
You will know all of these. And they release them, you know, as albums.
We all just started doing the same little bopping action.
I know it's not a Christmas song, but...
Makes you feel festive?
It has a joy.
Yeah. Maybe that's more a representation of me, but...
Still, yeah. Well, it's a good... It's a very good...
So this was from a 1930s movie originally, and then this version was released in 57 by Nina Simone.
And this is maybe, like, this is what I want to know, is are there definitive versions of the Great American Songbook tracks?
Yes and no, because one of the other characteristics of these songs, people feel like, why this song and not that song, is that they are so open to interpretation. Like, they're flexible enough to be the same song, but that each iconic singer, whether it's, you know, Frank Sinatra or Nat King Cole or Nina Simone, this sounds cheesy, make it their own. But they do, like, I was just saying, you know, earlier before we went on air, like, you know, when you're on YouTube, I went down a rabbit hole of the same song by many different singers.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I would definitely say, you know, I didn't even listen to it. It kept coming up all the time, like the Rod Stewart Great American Songbook. No. But apparently Ringo Starr released a Great American Songbook album in the 70s, which was one of the things that brought it back.
That's so interesting.
Did it go somewhere?
Well, it just, you know, people weren't doing as much jazz and rock and roll. It kind of took over. And so he sort of, that link between rock got the rock audience back into it.
So does this count not as folk music, but as our folk music, in the sense that these are, like, you know, songs owner?
They'll call it, American popular song. I mean, it does have an owner, and everyone knows the writers.
Yeah.
They're big people, Gershwin, Cole Porter, Irving Berlin. But yeah, that sort of sharing, although some of them are in the, they've passed the limit, and they are free now.
They're free now.
Some of them.
So what is the kind of, like... At what point did the Great American Songbook come to be? Do you know what I mean? When did people start sort of referring to these tracks as the Great American Songbook?
I don't know. Actually, that's a good question, because, I watched a couple little documentaries, and there have been a couple albums called that, and I'm wondering if it's the album titles.
Right.
That, you know, because the first one, I was, like, looking for the book. But, yeah, apparently Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan, Linda Ronstadt, you know, all these people. But then iconic singers like Ella Fitzgerald, Bing Crosby, you know. I mean, I think y'all should just, everyone should do a version of themselves this weekend.
Yeah, make your own.
Autumn leaves, come rain or come shine, jeepers, creepers, cry me a river. You know, we should all know these. But the other thing about them that I hadn't really clicked before either is they are particularly American.
Yes.
And someone was arguing that they're the equivalent of classical music to America. Music that becomes timeless and iconic. You know,
that's
classical music, you know, was written specific times, but it becomes timeless. And they're saying, yeah, this was America's contribution to, you know, timeless music that will last forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I, as I said before, the people writing at the time, I think, were just writing little ditties for whatever, you know, movie they were
musical
hired to
or
write.
Something, yeah.
They're also called standards, jazz standards. That sounds super jazz to me, but.
I do love that.
So I hope y'all are bopping around your house, you know, with your hairbrush microphone.
No one to talk with all by myself. I believe
no you read this sounds Christmassy too.
Yeah.
This is from a musical, isn't it?
Maybe we're just feeling a little bit festive.
Yeah. This is from it was from a musical called Hot Chocolate, which was like one of the first black, all-black musicals in 1929, written by Fats Waller, and then was used in the movie, which is one of the first black musical movies, Stormy Weather in 43. But this is Sarah Vaughan in 1950. So I think also, you know, some of us feel like, you know, songwriting is so important, you have to write your own songs. But
yeah,
in this earlier era, no, there was such thing as a singer.
Yeah, yeah.
Who,
and that kind of like 1950s, like 40s kind of thing where people started to do that. Maybe that's where we started to hear these songs have a bit of like revival for that first thing before the 70s
yeah.
kind of rolled around.
Yeah, and that, no, you know, songwriting and singer actually do different skills.
Totally.
Let's face it, Bob Dylan.
That's why the singer-songwriter genre exists, because they can do both.
That's right, and not everybody can, but this is something if you were a singer, you know, you sing these songs and you grow up. And
yeah.
I've played all of them, you know, at restaurants, you know,
yeah.
foyers of bank buildings, teaching them as singing teaching, you know. I didn't even know what they were called and that they had a thing, but they just appeared.
Maybe they feel festive to you, Tess, because they're, like, familiar, they're comforting, and they're joyful, which is kind of that sort of,
no,
like,
I think it's that happy era, you know, that people imagine Christmas in those, like, the 40s and the 50s New York, you know, the movies and
holly and mistletoe and stuff.
Now, this song has been covered by Miles Davis, Billie Holiday, Mos Def.
Whoa,
on,
nice.
On Be Kind Rewind.
Oh, true.
2008. And this is in the public domain, so y'all just go record it this week and make your own version.
Oh, right.
It's kind of a nice thing as well, maybe for, like, young artists who just don't have the money to buy the rights
agree.
To something.
I think
you know?
Any young artist, as part of their learning process, should work through some of these, whether it's, I mean, because this song also has operated like Louis Armstrong as an instrumental version.
Yeah.
You know, the melody's so iconic. Yeah, I
love Louis Armstrong.
Oh, well, have a look for his version of this.
That's my, that is actually my, sorry to bring up Christmas again.
Oh.
That is my actually festive album of choice.
I thought you were going to say Kryptonite, and I was like, all right, everyone, now you know what to play on your date.
Someone says, this is such a cool subject this week. Kia ora, Dr. Kirsten.
Oh, thank you.
I agree. This is awesome.
I know. I wish we... Maybe next Christmas we should arrange to have like a songbook marathon.
Yeah.
What, where we all met...
Where we go through a whole bunch of these songs for like a 24-hour period or something. Okay.
So, love the song.
So this is like a weird sampled... altered version, that sample there of Audrey Hepburn's version from the movie Breakfast at Tiffany's.
So was Audrey Hepburn's, this is Frank Ocean of course, but who did it first? Was
Audrey
it Audrey?
Hepburn.
It
yeah.
was Audrey.
And it's a relatively recent, I mean it was 61, you know, so we're not talking
it's a new
super
edition.
Old.
Yeah.
So it came out with the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this is Frank Ocean's version, which for some reason sounds scary.
Scary. Oh, I love this song. Off to
see the world. I think it was in the movie Us, maybe. That's why it gives me the shivers.
Great film.
But it won an Oscar for Best Song in 61 when it came out. Yeah, and it just, for some reason, this had that characteristic, like, this is going to be one of those. This is going to be a standard.
I wonder if it's also an association thing, like with being with the film and the scenes that the song is in.
Golden Hollywood era. Yeah.
Yeah.
People love this film. I don't even know if I've seen it, but I know it's iconic.
I've seen it many, many times.
See, yeah, I'm going to have to watch it, I think. Oh, you know, of course, you know, the blogs and Twitter was talking about that when Frank Ocean came out, you know, with the version 2018.
Yep.
Well, the young ones don't know that it's a cover and they don't know the old song.
But see, I think that's a stretch because I feel like this is a song people would have grown up hearing, like maybe sung to them or would have seen the movie, or it's pretty hard to avoid Moon River.
I would have thought so, but maybe it's the what Zillennials are remembering. But it shows that Frank grew up singing them and knowing them. You know,
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I think singers who are interested in their singing and work on it, work through these songs and have a couple that they know.
Yeah.
It's like pre-karaoke, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
That you have songs, you know, under your belt that you can bring out when needed. Chasing after us. Do you find that scary?
No, I think it's really beautiful. Like song. I think you're associating it with the scary
movie. I don't even know if it's in us. I'm trying to remember.
I think it's also lovely as well because when artists put out a song like this that is obviously part of a broader canon, in this case the Great American Songbook, you also get that little snapshot into their musical like background.
Yes, they're revealing it.
They're showing you their cards.
Possibly unconsciously, yeah. That you can understand parts of their childhood, whether it was through performance or through their parents' record collection.
Yeah.
Or through a music teacher that they had.
It's really interesting though, because like they don't feel like covers. I think because they're so so classic, and they've become so much more than, because there's so many iconic versions of it. Maybe it doesn't feel like, oh, that's Frank Ocean's cover of Moon River.
You're right.
It's like that's Frank Ocean doing Moon River
version. Stylings. Well, and also a lot of the musics that we do on the show are very raced, let's be honest, and we get this real racial divide. No one's commented on this, so I'm not quite sure yet. I haven't done enough research, but this feels very mixed race.
Mm.
A lot of the composers were like Jewish guys.
Yeah.
And a lot of these singers, black and white, you know, the film's black and white. And it doesn't seem to be that divide we saw in a lot of other
musics. That's really
in
interesting.
In America, you know, when we talk about American music.
Yeah, yeah.
We've often had this sort of, but this, I haven't read anything that indicated someone stealing this or not crediting that. And you know, we played all African-American singers, you know, and you know, and then no one's critiquing that, you know, that Mel Torme and Frank Sinatra shouldn't do their versions or Bing Crosby. No, it's all quite mixed. Yeah, Willie Nelson, I don't know if I'd buy that one, but well, Bublé, you know, those guys.
I will never Michael Bublé's version of Cry Me a River just makes me want to, like, I don't know, close my ears off for good. Not good.
Go find somebody else. Go find Ella. But I really recommend rabbit holing some of these songs this weekend or recording them yourselves.
Excellent stuff. Good project.
Good present for the parents. Mom, I'm going to sing you a song.
Yeah, exactly. Get your ukulele out. Thank you very much, Dr. Kirsten.
You're welcome.
We will see you next week. What will we be talking about?
So it's our last week, right?
Yes.
So I couldn't pick some sort of weird, interesting, random genre. We're just going to do summer songs.
Iconic summer songs. I like that.
Summery songs. It's probably going to rain that day, but
we're going to bring the sun.
Summer. Yep.
Thank you very much. We will see you then.
That was Travelling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimpke.
And we will be